All right, welcome back, everybody. Ready for another deep dive?
Definitely.
Today, we're going to tackle a case about politics and government work.
Okay.
United Public Workers versus Mitchell from 1949. It's relevant today because it's about fundamental rights and how they apply to people who work for the government.
It's a fascinating case. One of the biggest questions it raises is, you know, how much can the government actually limit the political activities of its own employees? Like, where's the line?
And we're talking about millions of people, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not just like a small group.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
We're talking about teachers, park rangers, scientists, even the people who work at the Mint making our money.
Exactly. And to really understand the case, we have to go back to the Hatch Act of 1939.
Okay.
This law was designed to prevent federal employees from, you know, using their positions for political gain.
So keeping it nonpartisan.
Yeah. Basically aiming for a nonpartisan government workforce.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So to guide us today, we've got excerpts from a legal case brief on United Public Workers versus Mitchell. And we also have the full text of the Supreme Court opinions in this case.
Oh, wow.
And from what I'm seeing in the case brief, it looks like a union representing federal employees and some individual employees challenged the Hatch Act, said it was unconstitutional.
Right. They argued that it violated a bunch of amendments to the Constitution, you know, placing restrictions on their political activities.
Which amendments?
The First, Fifth, Ninth, and Tenth Amendments.
Whoa. Okay. Hold on. Let's break that down for a sec. That's a lot. We're talking about freedom of speech, due process, and even the balance of power between the federal government and the states.
Yeah, you got it. The First Amendment, as you know, protects freedom of speech, and the Fifth guarantees due process of law,
right?
Which basically means the government can't, you know, just deprive you of life, liberty, or property without fair legal proceedings.
Right.
Then the Ninth and Tenth Amendments deal with rights reserved to the people and the states. So yeah, the plaintiffs were making a pretty broad argument claiming the Hatch Act was overreaching in several ways.
No surprise it went to the Supreme Court, then. And I'm seeing that there are multiple opinions in this case.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the majority opinion, of course.
Right.
But then we also have some dissenting opinions from Justices Black and Douglas.
Right.
Sounds like even the justices weren't totally in agreement on this one.
Yeah, and that's important, right, that there were multiple opinions. It shows that even on the Supreme Court, there was this debate about how to balance the need for an impartial government with the individual rights of its employees.
For sure. For sure. So let's start with that majority opinion.
Okay.
What did most of the court decide?
Well, they basically said the Hatch Act is constitutional.
Okay.
Their main reasoning was that Congress has a legitimate interest in regulating, you know, the conduct of federal employees to make sure the government runs smoothly and fairly.
So even though the Hatch Act limits political activity, the court felt that those limits were justified to prevent corruption or even just the appearance of bias.
Exactly. The majority was concerned about, like, preventing situations where government jobs were basically political favors, you know?
Oh, I see.
Or where employees felt pressured to support certain candidates or parties to keep their jobs.
Ah, so they were trying to avoid, like, a spoils system type of situation.
Yes, exactly. The majority was afraid that without the Hatch Act, we'd just go back to the days when, you know, government jobs were given out as rewards for political loyalty rather than being based on merit or qualifications.
Yeah.
And they thought that kind of system undermines public trust in the government.
For sure, for sure.
And can lead to inefficiency and corruption.
Yeah, that makes sense. So how did the Hatch Act decide what was okay and what wasn't okay when it comes to political activity?
The majority's opinion really focused on something called partisan political activities, which they saw as the most dangerous to a neutral and efficient government.
So things like campaigning for specific candidates or parties?
Right, exactly. Things like, you know, using your position to sway an election or putting pressure on your coworkers to support a particular candidate.
Got it.
But the act did make some exceptions.
Oh, okay. So there were some things federal employees could still do politically.
Yeah. The Hatch Act specifically said it was okay to vote and even express personal political opinions.
Yeah.
But it had to be done privately, not while they were working or in any official capacity.
So you could have like a heated political discussion at home, but you couldn't like organize a campaign rally on the weekend.
Exactly. The whole point was to draw a line between personal beliefs and actions that could be seen as using your government position for partisan purposes.
It sounds like a tricky line to draw. And that's probably where those dissenting justices come in.
Yeah.
What did they have to say?
Well, from what I've read, Justice Black was pretty vocal about his concerns. He thought the act was way too broad and that it went beyond what was really necessary to prevent corruption. He was worried about something called a chilling effect on free speech, basically.
So meaning that because it's so strict, people might just not talk about politics at all, even when it would be perfectly legal.
Exactly. And Justice Black thought this was a huge problem because, you know, free and open discussion of politics is crucial for a healthy democracy.
Right.
So he saw the Hatch Act as potentially silencing a lot of people and ultimately weakening the democratic process.
And remember, this is all happening in 1949, long before the internet and social media.
Oh, right.
I can only imagine how much more complicated all these free speech questions would be today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just think about all the different ways we can talk about politics online these days. It would be so hard to figure out how to apply the Hatch Act to something like social media in a fair and consistent way.
So Black was saying that even though the Hatch Act was trying to do something good, it could actually end up doing more harm than good.
Right.
By preventing people from participating in politics.
Exactly. And he had an issue with the specific language of the act. Okay.
It prohibited employees from taking an active part in political management or in political campaigns. And Black said that was just way too vague. It didn't give employees enough information about what they could and couldn't do.
So basically, you'd always be worried that someone was watching and might misunderstand what you were doing.
Exactly. And that kind of uncertainty can really discourage people from speaking their minds.
Yeah, that makes sense. What about Justice Douglas? Did he have a different take on the Hatch Act?
Yeah, he was coming at it from a slightly different angle.
Okay.
While he agreed with some of Black's concerns, he was more focused on fairness.
Fairness, okay.
He didn't think it was fair to apply the same restrictions to all federal employees, no matter what their job was.
I see.
Especially when it came to people whose jobs had nothing to do with shaping policy.
Right.
Like, he used the example of George P. Poole, one of the guys who brought the lawsuit, who worked as a roller at the Mint.
Okay.
His job was basically mechanical, nothing to do with influencing public policy right now. So Douglas was saying it was too much to apply those same restrictions to someone like that.
Exactly. Because for someone like Poole, the consequences of violating the Hatch Act were way too harsh compared to the risk of him actually doing something wrong.
Right, right.
Like being fired from your job is a pretty extreme punishment for something that might not even be a big deal.
It sounds like both of the dissenting opinions were arguing for a more nuanced approach to the Hatch Act.
Yes.
Something that focused on specific problems without restricting free speech too much.
Exactly. They wanted a system that went after actual corruption or misuse of authority, instead of just assuming that any political activity by federal employees is automatically bad.
It's so interesting how this case from 1949 still feels relevant today.
Yeah, for sure.
It really highlights this tension between individual rights and the need for a government that can operate effectively and impartially.
It's a tough balance to strike.
It is. And before we go to break, I want to hear your thoughts on how this case might be decided differently if it were argued today.
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Given all the changes in technology and how we communicate.
Definitely.
But I think we'll save that discussion for after the break.
Okay, sounds good.
We'll be right back to continue our deep dive into United Public Workers versus Mitchell.
Looking forward to it.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Before the break, we were talking about the United Public Workers versus Mitchell case and how it shows this balance or tension, I guess you could say, between individual rights and how the government needs to function.
It's a classic dilemma, right? And the majority opinion in that case really leaned on this idea of keeping a neutral and effective civil service. Like they kept coming back to that.
Okay.
And they said allowing too much political activity by people working for the government could lead to a lot of problems.
Like what kinds of problems specifically?
Well, they were worried about political favoritism, like when it came to hiring and promotions.
Yeah.
You know, imagine a scenario where somebody gets a promotion, not because they earned it, but because they, I don't know, donated to the right campaign or something.
Oh, I see.
Or they're in the right political party.
Right.
And that just totally erodes public trust.
Yeah, sure.
And it leads to, you know, a workforce that's not really functioning at its best.
So it wasn't just about, like, outright bribery or anything like that, right? It was more about creating this atmosphere where people might feel pressured to engage in political stuff just to keep their jobs or get ahead.
Exactly. They were really trying to avoid that sense of coercion, where you feel like you have to do something to keep your job, even if you don't want to, or where there's this sort of implicit bias in the workplace. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I get it.
And on top of that, they argued that allowing federal workers to do whatever they wanted politically could create situations
Okay.
where people might use their official positions to push partisan agendas.
So instead of actually serving the public, they might be more focused on, like, I don't know, steering government contracts to certain businesses, but
Exactly.
prioritizing help for people who agree with them politically.
Exactly. Those were some of the concerns that came up.
I see.
And they saw the Hatch Act as this really important safeguard against those kinds of things.
Okay, that makes sense. But then we have those dissenting justices
Right.
who obviously had a different perspective on this whole thing. And you mentioned earlier that Justice Black was especially worried about how the Hatch Act could limit free speech.
Yeah, he argued that it created this atmosphere, kind of a culture of fear among federal employees,
Okay.
where they wouldn't even talk about politics in their personal lives.
Right, because if you don't know exactly where the line is, it's easier to just avoid it altogether.
Exactly. And Justice Black thought that was really bad for democracy, you know, because he believed that open discussion about politics is so important.
Makes sense.
And by silencing a whole bunch of voters, he saw the Hatch Act as making democracy weaker.
And it's like we were saying before, this was way before the internet and social media.
Yeah.
Imagine how much more complicated it would be to apply these rules today.
It'd be a nightmare. I mean, how do you even define political activity when you think about all the ways we can express ourselves online?
Right.
Back then, it was simpler, you know? Like, there was a clear difference between giving a speech at a rally
Okay.
and just talking to your family about politics.
Yeah.
But now, with social media, those lines are totally blurred.
It's true. Like, is a Facebook post public or private? What about just sharing an article? It's really hard to say.
It is. It's tricky.
And that would make it super hard to use the Hatch Act in a way that's fair to everyone. It's like
Exactly.
trying to, I don't know, put a square peg in a round hole or something.
Yeah, exactly. The Hatch Act just wasn't written for this kind of world.
Right. And it wasn't just about what you said either. It was about
Right.
what you did. So, liking a post or sharing something online, could that be considered taking an active part in a political campaign?
Well, that's what the Act says, so who knows?
That's kind of scary, honestly.
Yeah, it does make you think about how much is too much, right? Like, would the government start monitoring everyone's social media?
That just seems like a logistical nightmare, and not to mention kind of creepy.
Oh, totally. Can you imagine how much that would discourage people from speaking their minds?
It's like having Big Brother watching your every move.
Exactly.
So it seems like maybe we need to totally rethink how we regulate political activity for government workers,
Yeah, I think so.
especially with the rise of the internet and social media. The world has changed so much since the Hatch Act was passed and since this United Public Workers case was decided.
I agree. If we were writing a law like the Hatch Act today, we'd have to consider all these new things. How do
Right.
you keep a neutral government workforce while also respecting people's right to free speech online?
And how do you take into account all the information we're exposed to these days?
Yeah, and the fact that it's so easy to get caught up in these online echo chambers where everyone just agrees with each other.
It's a tough problem to solve.
It is, but it's an important one.
It is. And it shows that these questions about individual rights and the government's role, they're always evolving.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
that's a good thing.
Right.
It means our system is capable of adapting to new challenges.
Definitely.
Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up this part of our deep dive.
Okay.
We've talked about the specifics of the Hatch Act and the arguments in the United Public Workers case, and we've also touched on the broader questions about free speech and how technology has changed everything.
Yeah, it's been a really thought-provoking discussion.
I agree. We'll be back in just a moment to finish up our deep dive into United Public Workers versus Mitchell.
And we are back for the final part of our deep dive on United Public Workers versus Mitchell.
Yeah, this case has really been fascinating, hasn't it?
It has. And like we were talking about before, the world has changed so much since 1949,
Oh, yeah.
especially when it comes to technology and how we all communicate online.
It makes you wonder how this case would be decided if it were argued today, you know?
Totally. Like we touched on before, trying to apply the Hatch Act's rules about political activity to something like social media.
Yeah.
It seems almost impossible.
It does. Back in 1949, things were so much simpler.
Right.
It was easier to tell the difference between public and private speech, like giving a speech at a rally versus talking politics with your family at dinner. But with social media, it's all just kind of out there.
It's true. Like, where do you draw the line? Is a Facebook post public or private?
Exactly. And what about sharing an article? Is that campaigning?
Yeah, it gets really murky really fast.
And that would make it so hard to enforce the Hatch Act fairly, I think.
For sure.
Because the act wasn't just about what you said, but also what you did.
Right.
So liking a post or retweeting something, could that be seen as taking an active part in a political campaign?
I mean, technically, that's what the act says.
It's a little unsettling to think about, honestly.
Yeah, it definitely raises some questions about how much oversight is too much, you know?
Right. Like, would the government have to be constantly monitoring everyone's social media accounts?
It's a scary thought, isn't it? And logistically, it seems like a nightmare.
Totally. And it would make people so hesitant to say anything online.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Who wants to feel like Big Brother is watching their every move?
Exactly. So yep. It seems like we might need to come up with a whole new way of thinking about this issue.
I think so, too.
Especially with the internet and how much it's changed the way we communicate and engage with politics.
It's not just about social media, either.
Okay.
It's the sheer amount of information we're exposed to every day, especially online.
It's overwhelming sometimes.
It is. It's totally different from 1949.
Back then, you might read a couple of newspapers or listen to the radio.
Right.
But now, we're constantly bombarded with news and opinions from every direction.
And it's often tailored to our specific interests, so it can feel like everyone's just living in their own little echo chamber, you know?
Absolutely. So in that kind of environment, is it even realistic to expect government workers to stay completely neutral?
It's a tough question. It's like the Hatch Act assumes you can just shut off all your political thoughts and opinions when you go to work.
Right. Like you can just separate yourself from all of that.
Exactly. Which is probably impossible for most people.
Especially nowadays.
Yeah.
So if we were going to write a law like the Hatch Act today, it would have to be so much more nuanced and take into account all these new challenges.
I agree. It would be a huge undertaking.
It would.
But it's a conversation we need to have.
Because at the end of the day, it's about finding that balance between protecting individual rights and making sure the government can function effectively and impartially.
It's a balancing act for sure.
In this case, United Public Workers versus Mitchell, even though it's from so long ago, it really shows us how complex these issues are.
It does, and it reminds us that these questions are always evolving.
Right, the world changes and we have to adapt.
Exactly, and that's what's so great about our system of government, you know? It's designed to change with the times.
Well said. Well, on that note, I think it's time to wrap up this deep dive.
Okay.
We've covered a lot of ground today, from the specifics of the Hatch Act and the United Public Workers case to these broader questions about free speech and technology and how they're all connected.
It's been a great discussion. I've learned a lot.
Me too.
Yeah.
And remember, folks, the goal of the deep dive is to give you the information you need to be engaged and informed citizens.
So keep those minds engaged, everybody.
And keep those sources coming. We'll be back next time with another deep dive.
See you then.